curated to encourage leaders at all levels to be their best selves and to bring a fresh, curious perspective to today's issues in business and culture. Our goal is to equip listeners with the resources to always move forward.
Welcome to the Always Forward Leadership Podcast. I'm Carla Solnes, and I'm here with Ron Kitchens. How are you today, Ron?
I am awesome.
Glad to hear it. So, Ron, last week we talked about micromanaging, and we talked a little bit about your journey in the growth cycle of an organization and how you moved away from being a point leader and really tried to establish a structure for the organization that in which the organization could grow and thrive. And we talked about that personal journey. So listeners, if you haven't listened to that, you might want to go back and listen to last week's episode. We're going to take it in a little bit of a maybe a cousin-like direction today because we're going to talk about collaborative leadership and what that means. So just to give the listening audience a little bit of insight, when we were talking about this and thinking about this, a Harvard Business Review case came up and it was talking about collaborative leadership, and they really described it as the capacity to engage people and groups outside of formal control and to inspire them to work towards common goals. And so when you think about collaboration, that makes a lot of sense. But how does this actually play out in an organization, Ron?
So the funny thing, we talked about collaboration. In a lot of organizations, that means the boss comes in and tells you what he thinks and then says, okay, tell me what you think. Well, nobody ever disagrees. And so you get this echo chamber and then failure starts to seep in and people go, well, we don't understand why it's not working. We're collaborating. Well, that isn't really what collaboration is. You know, collaboration, it's really hard in strong organizations because people were hired and they're successful for their ability to make decisions, to see opportunities and move forward. And so what you find is people, if their real collaboration hadn't taken place, they will just opt out. They may be in the meeting, but they're not really participating and they're not really taking ownership of it because they don't feel they have any input on it. Because the strong leader, whether it's the boss or somebody who has point leadership on that idea, is dominating things. So it's one of those things that if you can't get past, then you can only be as strong as the individual leader's capacity. And that's finite. You know, great individuals will never beat great teams.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. I like the point you made about collaborative leadership because we often fall back into, well, there was a couple people in the room when that decision was made, but did they really feel like their voice was of value? And did they really feel like they could speak their voice? Or was the decision going to come from the point leader anyways? And I think that's a good point. So when we think about collaborative leadership and how to build a team that can do this, I know here at Southwest Michigan First, we've had a lot of success with certain teams really building that collaborative spirit. And there's some teams that are still working their way to a high level of collaboration just due to the functions within teams. But there's other teams that have really found a really good rhythm in this. Can you kind of walk through how you've seen those teams evolve to really adapt that spirit of more of a collaborative decision-making and collaborative leadership?
Yeah, as much as I hate when people talk about generations and they label different generations, I will tell you Gen X and Millennial are far better collaborators. And I think, you know, early on, education was much more collaborative. You know, they worked in team environments in from middle school through high school and, you know, working on projects together. So collaboration is more natural. When you get top end of Gen X, which is where I am, you know, we're into baby boomers. That was still kind of the lone hero model. And I kind of put it in the context of when I went to school, when I was in high school. Yes, that's pre-internet. The people who had knowledge had the power. So if your family was wealthy enough, and mine was not, to own a set of encyclopedias, your reports that you had to write were always better. And if you could get to the library and somebody didn't already have the book you needed, you still could compete, but it was far more work. And most of the time, you really couldn't compete. And so it created this kind of lone wolf mentality where knowledge became universal. It has allowed people to collaborate together because they're not having to compete for the knowledge. And that takes cultural changes. A lot of organizations are built around this scarcity model. And as a leader, as the point leader, you've got to say, no, that's not how we operate. We understand that the power of team. Now, humans want to keep score. You know, Kelsey, my daughter, was in a basketball league early in her playing sports where they didn't keep score. But every kid at the end of the game knew exactly what the score was of that game. It's just human nature. So you have to have systems in place that the individual knows that they are valued and their work is important, but that to run the race together as a team is far and away more advantages to success and to enjoyment. It's just more fun to do things with the team.
Yeah, I definitely agree. And I think that when you think about building organization that really truly does adopt this philosophy of collaborative leadership, it really starts at the top, because you can't have a couple teams that collaborate well if the leaders of those teams don't collaborate well. So how have you really kind of set the tone or pushed yourself to set the tone as a good collaborator, not only as you look at just what we might call our management team here or the team of point leaders that you directly lead, but how have you kind of allowed that spirit of collaboration to trickle down with you as an example of a collaborator?
So there's two sides to that. Let me take the obvious one. I have to miss meetings. So if I'm in the meeting, people are going to gauge the success of their or failure of their ideas of what's going on based on my body language, based on my attention stream, based on everything I'm doing, which may not have anything to do with what they just said. I'm still got my brain in the last issue. And so I have to intentionally miss those meetings. And people have to know that I care, but I don't need to be involved in everything. So, and that's hard for most point leaders. The other way of ensuring collaboration is by who you hire. And thank goodness it's become more and more of a rarity. But even 10 years ago, 5 years ago, I'd go into meetings and it would all be men of the same age in the meeting. Everybody got promoted together. Everybody came up together. It was just, there was never, they would reach consensus, but there would be no new ideas. There'd be no new adjustments. And I think that's the reason we've seen organizations die. I mean, companies leaving the Fortune 500, being delisted from the Dow because they lacked that diversity. You know, but on the same twist, if you hire diverse people, and then as a point leader, you have to make sure that you're getting honest feedback, somebody that can raise the BS flag and say, hey, here's what I think you meant, but here's how we took it in the room. And, you know, I know I was just in a meeting in Atlanta with a group of leaders, and one of them said, I'm so tired of being told I'm not politically correct. And I thought to myself, I kind of know what he's talking about, but mostly what he's talking about is I don't want to change to the modern standards of what society expects. And that's the sign of death. We're a woman-led organization of the management team. I'm the only man. And that's because we hire based on talent and strengths, not on gender, where you went to school, did we come up together in the environment. And by doing that, and I think, frankly, by having more women on our team and people of diverse ages, collaboration becomes the default setting, not something we have to work towards.
Yeah. And one of the things that you, from my seat, that I've seen you do is really with the management team. And it would have been easy as you established that management team to really kind of individually support each leader and not build that collaboration and that camaraderie amongst that team. And I think it's something that at the executive level or leadership level of any organization, that team can sometimes be the hardest to get to collaborate because there's a little bit more power at stake in that team. And I think there's been times, and you can maybe give other examples, where you have said, no, so-and-so and so-and-so, you're going to work together on this, or your teams need to come together on this project. And there's really no clear point leader for that project because now it's sitting in the middle of two divisions. You may have other examples of that, but I think when I look at building that, it again, it starts at the top of you setting an example and then almost really forcing or encouraging strongly that the people right next to you are doing the same.
Yeah, no, I think that's critical. And because it cascades down the organization. So, you know, management reflects as a mirror to the organization. So if they see collaboration taking place, relationships happening and getting stronger, then everyone on the team will understand that that's our culture. So if, you know, as the point leader of the organization, if I don't mandate that, if you will, and let people know that, you know, we expect their better angels to show up at work every day, that, and to use their capacity where appropriate. Every second you don't use in a day is gone, you know, at midnight. And so, you know, and in the end, you know, if we want to change people's lives, if we want our businesses to grow, we have to look at how do we maximize those resources, and no one has enough to do it on their own. And so in our team, anyway, if you can't collaborate, you probably can't stay.
No, it is a very collaborative environment, and you definitely set that up with great intention. You mentioned consensus versus collaboration earlier in the podcast, Ron, and I want to circle back, and I know we can probably attach an article that we had that really kind of even more formally described this. But one of the things that I think stands out in this is that, it can be easy to set up a group of people and give them the power to make decisions, but not have that go down into truly a collaborative group. And so how did you, as you were setting up those teams, how did you make sure that it wasn't just the management team members that had the ultimate power? And do you have examples of specific teams that you could say work well without necessarily having one person that's kind of the direct decision maker?
Yeah, I think the consensus versus collaboration. So we can get consensus. I can go into any meeting in our organization and tell people what I believe, and here's what I think we should do. And everyone will nod their head and go, well, he's clearly thought this out and he's the boss. So, yep, we all agree. That's what we're going to go do. Now, that doesn't mean they have any ownership. That means when it's hard, when it means when something goes wrong, are they going to react to it and take ownership to achieve the results? Not most of the time, because they didn't own the process. So collaboration is about ownership. So it's about people coming around this idea that we built this together, even if you didn't, in the idea that you pitched isn't what ultimately got decided on. The fact that you were heard and you were part of that gives you great empathy for the outcome. And you want to make sure that the outcome is achieved because you were part of creating the strategy. So, you know, you've got to do that well, but you also have to define what ultimate goals are the best you can. Sometimes we believe that the greatest force for change is a job. And we have an idea of what we want to focus on, but there's a lot of time that the universe drives that more than we do. And so, but everybody here knows that we will do whatever it takes. We'll move heaven and earth to help create jobs for people that need those economic benefits. And so it sure would be easier if it was, you know, top down kind of hierarchy, but it sure wouldn't be as effective. And it just frankly wouldn't be as fun.
So one last thing before we wrap up this episode on collaborative leadership. We're going through obviously a massive information age where the technology is driving communication in a lot of organizations, which can be really healthy. But when we talk about collaborative leadership and collaborative organizations, I think it's important to point out that there is a human element to that. And you can you can use a lot of these platforms that are helping to project manage and to communicate, like we use Slack as example. But what is your concern about the drastic shift to using everything to communicate things versus having that in-person human element of collaboration?
So I love Slack. I was a slow adopter. Actually, I didn't even let the organization go with it until I'd read about it in three different novels that I read that were businessy kind of novels where they were using Slack. And I thought, all right, if it's that ubiquitous, we better get in. But I love it now for its ability to communicate, and I can go back and see the chain of communications and remind myself why we made the decisions that we did. But that isn't how I define success or know that things are successful. When I know things are successful is when I hear team members laughing. We're in a big open office. There's kind of sections of it. So there's little clustering. But when I hear team members from multiple different teams laughing, enjoying each other, when babies show up at the office and we have a lot of babies and we have more on the way, you know, and people are ooing and cooing over them, I know that that's the win, because it is hard to not collaborate with somebody or have their back when you've held their baby and or when you've laughed at them about something that happened or you saw or how hard the latest puzzle is that we're working on. That's what success looks like. We have a big scoreboard. We know what the data tells us. But for me, you know, it's the laugh quotient that I know that we're doing well as a team.
Well, Ron, do you have any final thoughts on collaborative leadership before we say goodbye to the listening audience for today?
For those that are of a certain age, collaboration seems like a buzzword and seems scary, but would you rather take the field in sports when everybody else is playing as a team? Would you like to go out and play 11 men on one side of the football field and you by yourself? Who do you think's going to win that game? So, you know, if you're going to be scared of anything, be scared to not collaborate, because that's where you're going to lose.
I think that's a really great ending point. So we will talk to everyone next week. We hope you enjoyed today's episode on collaborative leadership, and we're looking forward to sharing some more insights from Ron Kitchens in the following weeks.
Thanks for joining us. We hope today's conversation inspired you to keep moving forward on your leadership journey. To connect with Ron, you can tweet him at Ron Kitchens or send him a message via ronkitchens.com. If you are listening via iTunes, please leave a review. It really helps us connect to you, grow our impact, and keep moving always forward.